A stream of fire poured into the front of the Condor from the Vickers, while the second gunner leaned far over the rear cockpit combing to train his Lewis gun on the pair of BMW engines attached to the port wing. Coin-sized holes appeared all around Ernst Kessler, the aluminum glowing cherry red for an instant before fading. There had been only a few seconds between Dietz's scream and the barrage that swept the underside of the Condor, not nearly long enough for fear to cripple the team. When Ernst looked up and across the 50-foot trailing edge of the port wing, the fear he had been too distracted to acknowledge hit him full force. Smoke trailed from both 9-cylinder engines, and he could plainly hear the power plants were misfiring badly.
"Captain!" he shouted into the microphone.
"Shut up, Kessler!" Lichtermann snapped. "Radio men, get up here and give me a hand. Ebelhardt's dead."
"Captain, the port engines!" Kessler insisted.
"I know, damn it, I know! Shut up!"
10 minutes trickled by. Young Kessler resisted the urge to ask the pilot about their situation. He knew Lichtermann would tell him something as soon as he could. Kessler jumped and hit his head on an internal strut when he heard a new sound, a whooshing gush that came from directly behind him. The plexiglass canopy protecting his position was suddenly doused with droplets of some liquid. It took him a moment to realize Lichtermann must have calculated the Condor's fuel load and the distance back to their base at Narvik. He was dumping excess gasoline in order to lighten the aircraft as much as possible. The fuel dump tube was located behind his ventral gun position.
"How are you doing down there, Kessler?"
Lichtermann asked after cutting off the flow.
Fine, sir,"
Kessler stammered.
"What do you want me to do, sir?"
"Stay at your station and keep an eye out for any more swordfish. We're making less than 100 knots, and one could sneak up on us."
"What about Lieutenant Ebelhardt and Corporal Dietz?"
"Didn't I hear that your father's a minister or something?"
"Grandfather, sir, at the Lutheran church in our village."
"Next letter home to him, have him say a prayer. Ebelhardt and Dietz are both dead."
There was no more talk after that. Kessler continued to stare into the darkness, hoping to spot an enemy plane, but praying he didn't.
"I can see the coast," Lichtermann announced after 40 minutes. "We'll make Narvik yet."
The Condor was down to 3,000 feet when it flashed over Norway's north coast. It was a barren, ugly land of foaming surf crashing against featureless cliffs and islands. Only a few fishing villages clung to the crags and inlets, where natives eked a meager living from the sea. Ernst Kessler felt a small lift in his spirits. Somehow, being over land made him feel safer. Not that a crash into the rocky terrain below would be survivable, but dying on the ground, where the wreckage could be located and his body given a proper burial, seemed so much better than the anonymity of dying at sea. On the flight deck, Lichtermann slammed the rudder hard over in an attempt to keep the Condor from spiraling. The thrust from the starboard wing and the drag from the port made the aircraft all but impossible to fly. It kept wanting to nose over to the left and dive. Kessler was thrown violently against his gun mount, and a loop of ammunition whipped around him like a snake. Lichtermann held the plane steady for a few seconds longer, but knew it was a losing battle. The Condor was too unbalanced. If he had any hope of landing it, he had to equalize thrust and drag. He reached out a gloved hand and hit the kill switches for the starboard engines. They wound down quickly. The stationary propeller continued to cause extra drag on the port side, but Lichtermann could compensate as his aircraft became an oversized glider.
"Kessler, get up here and strap in," Lichtermann shouted over the intercom. "We're going to crash."
The plane shot over a mountain guarding a fjord with a small glacier at its head, the ice dazzlingly white against the jagged black rock. Ernst had his shoulder straps off and was bending to crawl out of the gun position when something far below caught his eye. Deep in the cleft of the fjord was a building constructed partially on the glacier. Or perhaps something so ancient that the glacier had started to bury it. It was difficult to judge scale in his brief glimpse, but it looked large, like some kind of old Viking storehouse.
"Captain," Kessler cried, "behind us, in that fjord, there is a building. I think we can land on the ice."